Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
John Osher will be joining me here in the next couple of moments. He should be walking into the studio any minute now. He will be joined shortly, as will I, by Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley, who will be in. We're expecting him in at 10:05 this morning, so here in the next couple minutes, we'll have an opportunity to sit down with the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Mike Dempsey, not in today. He got called away for, I think, some serious XM duties this morning, so he's not able to be here. But I'm with you, Fat Tony. John Osher will be joining me, like I said, in just a couple of moments. And Dante Fowler, you heard him there on the open. Happy birthday, Dante. Just 21 years old today, Dante Fowler, born in 1994. My gosh. Does that make me feel like I'm not an old man, but it's stuff like that that makes me feel my age, right? You see guys born in the mid-90s now that are playing in the National Football League. It's just unreal. But happy birthday to Dante Fowler Jr. He was out getting some work done at training camp this weekend. I saw him out there on Saturday and Sunday working a little bit. Sent Derek Marks working out there yesterday as well. Chris Clemens a little work on the side too. So everybody's out there pretty much for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But Dante, it's good to see him. And, man, his personality, just dealing with the fans, he's pretty incredible. And it stood out again this weekend. It was the first chance I had to see Dante, really, because I wasn't able to get out there for practice during the offseason. I'm not sure how much side work he was even able to do during the offseason, OTAs, all that stuff. But good to see Dante out there working out, and happy birthday to the young man as I welcome in John Osher. What's going on, Johnny O?
Not a lot, Tony. How are you?
I'm good.
Got the head ball coach coming in, huh?
Yeah, any minute. I think I just saw Tad Dickman walk by. I think he's going to grab him right now and bring him in.
It's usually the precursor of the head ball
coach. Yes, it is. And obviously with training camp getting started, a lot to talk about with Coach Bradley. We got a lot to get into with training camp opening this weekend as well. I know it's kind of a weird thing, you know, in that they're not even in pads yet. They haven't played any preseason games yet. So what, for you, you've been doing this a while now. For you, what are you looking for, especially in those first couple days out of training camp?
Well, I heard you and Dan talking, and you're exactly right, that it's tough to – the inclination is to come out of practice and say, wow, Allen Robinson had a 35-yard catch. He's having a great camp. Yeah, that's what you always hear.
Yeah.
So after a while, you kind of learn that those kind of ups and downs, what you're seeing isn't necessarily what the coaches are looking for during this time. And you also know that the coaches aren't necessarily, and the players even, aren't necessarily looking after 3 days to see who's grading out at a high level in the first three practices. That's not what this is about. A lot of this is trial and error stuff. Mistakes are expected. You don't necessarily get too wrapped up if one guy outperforms another on a given day. You're trying to get better. You're trying to practice and get ready for the season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a tryout. It's a practice. The takeaway that you have after the first 3 days, and this is from, you know, talking to coaches, you know, sort of on the side and talking to some scouts who are on the field, they just feel like overall they're significantly better, and that they have a roster that you can go into the season with and not look around and see a bunch of holes, not look at one position and say, wow, if one thing happens, we're in a little trouble there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess by that, I'm thinking of Parnell on the right side, and when you package him with Linder, you know, no matter what happens in these first 3 days, you just look at it and say, both those guys can play in the NFL, and both those guys can hold up, and we can do things behind those guys that you feel good about. So I think that's what you're looking for, is just overall, and Gus can speak to it a little better than me, maybe, right? But they just look better, and at so many more positions. I think Gus said in June or July when I was talking to him, they feel more competitive at all those positions. Well, when Gus says that, he means there's a lot going on, and once they get out of that competition, they're going to be better football team for it. I think I paraphrased you okay, right?
I didn't catch all of it, but it sounded good.
Head coach Gus Bradley joining us here in studio now. How are you, Gus?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
It's always better when you're here, man. That's the absolute truth. It's always better when you're in the room. How was the offseason for you before we get into training camp?
It was good. It was good. You know, I think, you know, we got away for a while and had a couple weeks just to kind of unwind from the OTAs and mini camp and put your thoughts together in a little family time. But so exciting, you know, that first day they show up and then the first day that you go on the field.
No, absolutely. Wanted to ask you about, because for me, one of the big questions about this football team going into 2015, obviously the coaching changes that you had to make, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You returned for training camp. You had the offseason to start installing that offense. Do you like where they were when they came back for the started training camp? Were they where you expected them to be on that side of the
ball? Yeah, that's a great question, because that's always, you know, you go through OTAs and minicamp. They're learning a whole new offense. And then what are they doing from that time from June 20th through July 27th or whatever the dates were, you know, that time frame? And very pleased with our guys. You know, I mentioned it before, like a guy like Blake Bortles, he really wanted to own the offense. And you could tell that he put his time in that period of time to study the offense and have a better idea of what's expected of them. And now Blake's not the only one. You see offensive linemen, receivers, you know, they went and worked out together over at Bishop Kenny High School. Just those things like that, I think are, you know, gives you great confidence that these guys are really competing hard to understand the nuances of the offense.
People watching practice, and this is fans and media, they want to count Blake's stats during practice. I mean, that's what everybody wants to do. Do you worry that much about Blake play-to-play during practice right now, or are you just looking for what you talked about yesterday, I think, a mastery of the offense, getting it, starting to do the things you want him to see?
I think we're looking for where he grows. You know, and that's with everybody in our team. So we don't get too caught up. You know, I'm sure, you know, they keep stats of,
Vito,
you know, the completion, the attempts and stuff like that. But there's times when, you know, we tell them, hey, take your chance. This is when you go, because you want to find out what guys can do. What can Hearnsey do? What can Allen Robinson do? What can Tony Washington, Marquise Lee? What can these guys do? Julius Thomas, let's find out what his skill set is and discover these guys' skills. And in order to do that, you got to take some chances. And we're okay with that, especially at this time. So, you know, there might be some incompletions and people are going, oh, no, he was, you know, this percentage. But that's not a concern of us right now. Right now is to play with no fear, like I mentioned yesterday, no doubt. And let's be aggressive in how we go about things.
I know last year, you know, when we were talking about the offense, you wanted to be a run-first team. It was something you wanted to establish the run early on. What is the philosophy with the new offense? Is it similar? Again, because we haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Right. Well, it, you know, I think it's, you know, every team would like to establish the run. And we did talk about that last year. I think when you can establish the run, it takes a lot of pressure off the, you know, the offensive line, takes pressure off the quarterback. You minimize turnovers. There's so many good things when you establish the run, but it's got to be a conviction, not just a commitment. I mean, where you're convicted to it. And that's what I liked in OTAs. Here we are, you know, doing all the run plays versus garbage cans. And it wasn't just who you block, but the right technique. And it just felt, you know, like that conviction was there. And then getting into, you know, training camp, where before every 9-on-7, the offensive coaches are getting the whole offense together and saying, all right, it's time now. This is the run period for us. And it's just a different feeling for our players. And, you know, I think our players have really gravitated to that. So, yes, it is. We've got to be able to run the ball. But it doesn't mean we're running the ball 50 times a game. It just, you know, where we can establish it, run when they know we're going to run. You know, those types of situations where our offensive line and running backs and the whole team has great confidence in it.
You said the players were convicted, but and if I'm reading this wrong, forgive me. It seemed like you, from the Senior Bowl on, have been talking a little bit more about the run game than you did in the past. Was this just something at the end of last season you said, we've got to be able to do this?
Well, we knew, you know, that we wanted to establish the run last year, too. And sometimes it just takes time with the continuity of the offensive line. And, you know, we were still at times figuring out who the starting offensive linemen were early in the season, where, you know, it's tough to build that continuity. But, you know, that's what I told them now. You know, when you had to, some changes on the offensive side, you know, Doug Marone's skill set, you know, as a coach, very very good with running the ball, very good in protections. Greg Olsen, you know, does a great job with protections, and he's convicted to run the ball along with the other offensive staff members. So I just think there's a stronger sense from the staff now of what we're trying to get accomplished, and it's real, and the players are feeling that.
I know I get asked all the time about what the running back depth chart is going to look like, and I'm not sure that we have a clear answer on that yet, but what have you seen from the guys that are here early on in camp, and is there a timetable for Storm Johnson to get back on the field?
Yeah, first of all, the position group, I think they're very versatile. You've got different, you know, Toby Gerhart's different than Denard Robinson in their running styles. And I know as a defensive coach, we would always look at the running backs and we would show our players different running styles. You know, if this guy's in the game, this is what you can expect. Well, if it's, you know, they have the same running styles, it's not too hard. You kind of, you know, you're ready for it. But when you have different running styles and different plays that go with that, it makes it more challenging. And that's what I like about our group. Guys like TJ Yeldon, you know, kind of a combination of both. And, you know, Bernard Pierce and Storm, you're right, all these guys, they have so many attributes that we just need to see it play out, need to put the pads on. I do know Toby Gerhart has really shown flashes this year. Versus last year at this time. And I think it's the style of runs that we have. You're seeing more downhill types of runs. And it probably suits his personality a little bit more. The same with Bernard. So the Storm Johnson question, yeah, we're hoping. We just got to wait and see till he gets cleared, you know, with our training staff. He's making good progress, paying attention, you know, does a good job in meetings and things like that. But we're just waiting for him to finally get cleared.
It strikes me that during this conversation, you've mentioned Bernard Pierce. We haven't talked about the offensive line very much, but you've got guys like Wisniewski, you've got guys like A.J. Cann, who right now aren't clear starters. And I guess what I'm getting at is, how much better is the depth on this team? How much deeper than the past two seasons? There are options, and when guys win jobs on this team, they're going to have accomplished something.
Right. Yeah, we're going to have some very difficult decisions, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. We want it difficult. We want it hard for us as a staff and as, you know, Dave and his staff. So, you know, and we're in better position. We've got in the offensive line really, really strong, legit competition mm-hmm. going on there. And you're right. Whoever comes out of that, you know, with the starting position, not only, you know, has accomplished something, but knows hey, the guy behind him is right there waiting too. You know, so that competition is constant. But, yeah, I think, you know, and I think from what happened last year, you know, the offensive line, it's a little bit of a let's get this right mentality. I don't know, chip on the shoulder or, you know, what you call it. But, I know, you know, they're a very prideful group. And, you know, they've taken everybody in. They feel it's like, you know, the power of us is what we talked about with the team. Well, that definitely resonates within that group.
You talk about the offensive line and the depth that they have there now. The other position group that it feels like it's pretty deep is cornerback. And I know for me, the first couple days looked like Devon House looked really good, looked really comfortable with what you guys are asking him to do on the defensive side of the ball. Has there been a couple standouts on that side for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple guys. You know, Demetrius McCray has just been very solid. You're right. With House, I think he's made some plays for us, and he does have a pretty good understanding. I think he's still learning some of the nuances of it, but we hope that those flashes show up even more. Aaron Colvin, I mean, just this is a challenge now. He's playing outside and the nickel, and you know, that's just difficult. Remember Will Blackman last year played a nickel spot, and that's really had him locked into. I remember a guy like Rondé Barber. You know, a guy that played outside and then in three wideouts came in and moved inside. And, you know, he wasn't even active for 14 games his rookie year. You know, it's a challenging task where Aaron Colvin has really embraced it, really, really competitive at the nickel spot and doing a good job on the outside too. So, you know, guys like that with Grotz and, you know, so much competition taking place there. You're right. We've got some difficult decisions with that group as well.
I think you talked some about this, but why is it so tough to find a guy who can really play nickel in there? And Colvin, from everything you've said, from everything D-Walk has said, Colvin can really do it. And it's about awareness. It's about something that you really can't teach, right?
Right. Well, you know, you can find a nickel that can play man. And then you also, that nickel also has to play the zone coverages. So he has to have great awareness. And a lot of times they can do one or the other. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking for a guy that can play man, he can play zone, and he can pressure. when you send him on a blitz, he's you know, is a good edge rusher that can make people miss or has the power or, you know, the elusiveness to get pressure on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're looking for a guy with those three traits.
That's and, a lot of traits.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard. And sometimes you find a guy that's got one of those skill sets and, you know, where Aaron Colvin can play zone, he can play man, and he's really extremely quick. So that would be a, you know, something that would be advantageous coming off the edge.
John joined Mike and I out of practice on Friday, and we were talking about the fan base, and it feels like they're cautiously optimistic about this
right.
team in 2015 right now. And I think we talk a lot about the number of wins. You know, that's an important number for the fans out there. It's hard to avoid all that noise
sure.
from outside the building as far as the expectations for this team going into year three with you and Dave. How do you look at those kinds of things, those conversations about win totals? How much does that factor into anything that you do? Like, just how do you approach that kind of conversation?
Well, I think, you know, so much, it's just a different world. You know, you can appreciate people, the cautiously optimistic, and our fan base, I think it's well documented. We appreciate them so much. And we're really trying to get this right for them, too. So, but I think, you know, with our players, right now there's some probably anxiety in our building. And if these players are more concerned how they're judged than getting better, well, they're going to probably have problems. You know, we say, hey, don't worry about that. Don't worry about being judged. You can't waste your time with that. Concern yourself with how you're going to improve and get better. And I think as an organization, that's the same way our mindset is. You know, there's going to be a lot of people, you know, wondering how we're going to be or judging us. That can't be our concern. Our concern has got to be our full attention on improving this team and improving this roster as fast as we can. And, you know, that's how we approach it.
Here's how many topics there are on this team. We haven't even talked about the quarterback.
Right.
Just the first 3 days, you've talked a lot, but for the purposes of this show, what have you seen out of him? And I know you're happy with how he's approached the off season, but then what you're seeing.
Sure. Yeah, we're excited about it, and I think the progress that he's made. You know, there's one thing to go throw routes on air. You know, the quarterbacks go out there, and all four look pretty good. You know, when you're doing that drill. But when the bullets fly and there's different looks from the defense and the pressure's coming, that's where you see great separation in the NFL. So we've seen improvement in his skill set, improvement in his knowledge of the offense. And, but the one thing that we know about Blake is he is tough. And as far as sitting in the pocket, and those things really don't faze him. The pressure and where you can at times make bad decisions. I think he went through a phase last year, but he kind of cleaned it up in the end. And that's what we saw when we drafted him. So you feel good that his skill set's improving and he has that tough-mindedness that, you know, we'll see when it takes place. But, you know, the arrow's definitely up.
You know who he is. That's head coach Gus Bradley, kind enough to join us in studio here on Jaguars Today here on a Monday. We'll see you tonight at Mantra,
Coach. Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks again to Coach Gus Bradley for joining us here in studio. Always good to have Coach Gus in and talk a little bit about what's going on with this football team. We'll dig into everything that he had to say as well as some of our thoughts about the first 3 days of training camp as we roll along. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey out today. Fat Tony, John Osier along here with you on a Monday edition of Jaguars Today as we roll along here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. I'm Fat Tony, John Osier alongside here for Jaguars Today. It's
Gus was good.
Gus was great. And it's always fun to have Gus in studio.
I said breaking news. He's always pretty good. But, you know, I thought he shared and got into some things that were interesting. Yeah, I think people listening certainly learned a little bit.
So yeah. And it's
that's what we're all about sometimes, Tony.
Sometimes. And I really am curious. It's one of the big questions I think it has to be for any fans out there. What is this offense going to be? And what do they want it to be? And, you know, you go out to training camp practices and everybody does, you know, the run game work. Like mm-hmm. every team's going to be putting in run game work. But I think there is a certain level of focus on what this team is trying to get accomplished mm-hmm. in the run game that I don't think has been here in the last couple of years. I do think there's a real stress on trying to get that part of this team rolling in 2015.
Well, and I asked Gus when he was in here about this. I remember at the Senior Bowl, standing on the practice field, one of the practice fields, at one of the practices, and him talking about it. And then at the owners' meetings, he kind of mentioned it again. And you think, okay, every coach sort of talks about the run. Everybody wants to run in the NFL at every level of football. And then they draft Yeldon, and they bring in Marone, and they go to gap blocking instead of zone blocking. And just over time, they're never really going to sit here in May and say, here's what we're going to do offensively. You know, Greg Olsen isn't going to come in here and say, we're going to try to do 58% this. You're not going to give away your system. But over time, when you listen to Gus and then when you see the practice, this team is going to want to run the ball. And they've got several backs. I think they feel like Yeldon at some point soon is going to be that go-to guy. But then they've got options off of that. I think they feel like with Parnell in here, drafting A.J. Can. I don't know if he starts or not, but looking like what they want the future of the line to look like, They want to run the ball. They want to take some pressure off Blake. If Blake develops quickly and can start making impact plays in the passing game, okay, well, then maybe you start doing that. But a young quarterback, a guy who believes in defense, all those things point to them really wanting to run the ball. I don't know what the percentage is, but certainly a lot better, and they want to be able to rely on it more. They haven't been able to rely on it the last 2 years because they haven't been able to rely on anything offensively.
No, they haven't. And I know a lot of fans out there when, you know, we ask us about the running back group that they have out there right now, and the guy he singled out was Toby Gerhardt. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of fans out there that just kind of rolled their eyes, like, seriously, we're going to try to prop this guy up? Look, whatever happened with the ankle early on last year, you may have never seen the Toby Gerhardt that they thought they were signing. And I'm not saying that I expect him to come in and be a 1,000-yard rusher for the Jaguars this year, but I do think that he has a role for this football team,
and he
has looked good early on in training camp. He looked good early on in training camp last year, too, and I think if you go back to this time last year, the expectations for Toby Gerhardt as we went through camp in the preseason kept going up and up and up and up and up. And then the injury happened against Philadelphia. And who knows if it was kind of a lost year for Toby or not. I'm sure he's not going to categorize it that way. And he shouldn't.
Last year?
Yeah.
He might. You know, I mean, it certainly wasn't what he wanted. The talk about Gerhardt, to me, doesn't feel like propping up. They're not talking about him like he's going to be a 100-yard back-a-game guy. I don't think they're... If he has to play a role where he's the main guy, I think he can do it for a period of time. But when you're talking about putting him in a role that he can play well, I think Gus said the exact thing that all the fans thought last year. I resisted it for a while. You know, he's not a stretch runner. You know, it certainly didn't perform well in that role last year.
Sure.
But they're trying to run him a little more downhill. Gus talked about getting him in positions and runs that he does well. To think that we saw it in Minnesota, he can come in and play a role and be effective in a role. That's sort of what the NFL is. Most teams run the ball that way now, meaning you have a couple of guys who play different roles. I think Yeldon is going to be really good. If you have that and a complimentary Toby Gerhardt to it, that gets interesting. That gets to where, again, you want things you can rely on offensively. I thought last year, until Allen Robinson got hurt, they started to be able to rely on that little slant play. You go to Blake Bortles with him. You know, you want to be able to rely on some running game with Yeldon. You want to be able to rely on Julius Thomas. You have to start piecing things together that you can rely on. Toby Gerhardt out of the backfield, Toby Gerhardt in some certain situations, maybe one more thing you can rely on. Not the bell cow necessarily,
sure,
but an element that you know can work consistently.
And talking about the running back position right now, I think that Toby has flashed at times during the first couple of days of camp. I think TJ Yeldon, I'm not concerned about Yeldon, right, because I think he's a great athlete. And there are times when you watch him and the instinct takes over for him and you see it, right? You can see it out there, even on the practice field. But I think at times here early on in camp, he's looked like a guy who everything is still going 1,000 miles an hour a little bit for him. And it's not overwhelmed, yeah. but it's just it happens with rookies from time to time.
Yeah.
And I think some fans may have noticed that he had the fumble on Friday. He had the drop pass on Saturday. And those are the things you talk about. But there are times, too, where, again, that instinct takes over and the athlete shows up.
Yeah, I asked somebody about the drop pass, and he said, look, he can catch the ball. He's got soft hands. You're going to have drops, and maybe that was a Friday thing first. I may be proven wrong in this. They're not concerned about him not being able to catch the ball. He's got natural hands for a running back. They love this guy, and they were ecstatic when he was there when they drafted him. And I was asked by a reader, does he remind me more of Maurice or more of Fred? Well, neither. He's not that. That's not the kind of back he is.
Mm-hmm.
But he can glide. He can see. His feet react quickly to what he sees. He can get away from a tackler in the line. I don't know that he's going to have a lot of 60-yard runs, but he can have a lot of 8, 12, 15-yard runs. And in the NFL, those matter. It's tough to make a living on breakaway runs in the NFL. But if this guy can start giving you what would have been last year a 3-yard run is now a 6-yard run, that piles up in your favor in a down and distance term, and that matters a lot.
No, it does. And look, I don't know that he'll have the same impact in his first 2 years as this guy, but he looks to me running the ball a lot like Le'Veon Bell. I'm not sure that he's going to be that player, right? Because mm-hmm. Le'Veon Bell's one of the handful of the best running backs in the league right now. But he looks that way when he runs the ball. And I think Bell's kind of that same way, too. He's not really going to break anything open, but he's always getting 5 and 6 yards, it feels like, every time he touches the ball. And he's a good receiver out of the backfield.
We're obviously going – we're talking about a back who hasn't been hit yet in the NFL.
Yeah.
So we have to couch it all. But sometimes there are guys when you in this environment so far – he looks better than any back I've seen around here. And I'm only going on 4 years, but since Maurice in 2011, I mean, obviously that's, but he's better. He looks better than the group since Maurice stopped being effective.
Yeah. And before,
looks a lot better.
Want to get into the other positions on offense, especially quarterback and the wide receivers here in just a minute. But before we get off running backs, should mention Denard Robinson has looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Through the first 3 days. Looks like he's put on some more. He looks more like a running back every year when he comes back from an offseason, which I think it speaks to his commitment to whatever role they want him to have.
And absolutely unfairly, he's been overlooked, and I haven't talked about him a lot. We haven't talked about him a lot. Because they clearly brought Yeldon in at some point to be the guy. But, yes, he looks better. And he showed for 3 or 4 games last year that, given the right circumstances, something happened and he was really effective for 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, something else happened after that where I think defenses started focusing on it a little more. They started focusing on the run. They shut that down and it showed, okay, we need something else besides this. But I almost hate to use the word weapon with him, because when he was a rookie, we called weapon, and it just didn't work out, and it got a lot of flack. He can do things, and much like we talked about with Gerhardt a second ago, all of a sudden you've got 3 guys back there who you know can do something effectively. And Denard, you know, the one thing about it is when he touches the ball, he can go all the way.
Yeah, and Gus said that too, just having those different guys who do different things presents problems for defenses, and Gus ought to know something about presenting problems to defenses. He's a defensive guy. He knows what bothers him on that side
and
of the ball.
And credit to Denard, too, for, this is a guy who came in and had a tough rookie year, but has committed to it, has done a remarkable job changing his body type, as you mentioned, and committing to being a running back to the point where we're now really not talking anymore, and haven't talked in a long time, about that being a gimmick or a weird thing. He can play running back. It's just a matter of sort of where he fits in.
Yeah, That, absolutely. He's John Osher. I'm Fat Tony. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars today. We'll talk about Blake Bortles and how some of those other offensive weapons look for the Jacksonville Jaguars early on in training camp for the fans out there who haven't had a chance to get out there. Of course, go to Jaguars.com. Check out all their coverage of what's going on with training camp as well. We'll roll along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday next here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Training camp underway for your Jacksonville Jaguars. It is Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey back with us tomorrow. I'm Fat Tony.
It should be my theme song in here.
John Osher with us here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on Jaguars today. Haven't gotten to it yet because, look, my morning started not great just with traffic. We got a 10 o'clock show. I walked into the building about 9:35 this morning and had to get ready for Gus and everything else. So a little flustered as we got the show started, but we're doing all right. The fan feedback spotlight question today, we're asking you, Jaguars fans, which non-rookie besides Blake Bortles needs to take the biggest step forward this year? So which second-year player or beyond besides Blake Bortles needs to take the biggest step forward in your mind this year?
You can, I imagine this is a runaway. Isn't it?
Yeah, you can react on Twitter at 1010XLFatTony, at John Osher, or at 1010XLTyler, as well as on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today. We'll get to some of your responses a little bit later on. There may be one guy who's getting a lot of attention. We'll talk about Mr. Jokel here in just a moment.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about Blake Bortles. And after an offseason, you saw him throughout the OTAs and minicamp. And, again, Mike and I didn't get the chance to get out there just because it was going on at the same time as the show every day. But all the mechanical stuff that he talked about, going into the offseason, coming out of it, going into training camp. I know for me, with my first chance to see him since he left last year, I don't know how much I can tell is different mechanically because I'm not a quarterback guru. I can tell that he looks more comfortable with what he's doing throwing the ball, and I think that's the word I would use with Blake Bortles going into year two. He looks comfortable, despite the fact that it's a new offense. There's a lot of new pieces in front of him, behind him too, around him. He looks very comfortable with what he's being asked to do early on in camp.
You know, if you've... I liken it to when I was in college. A couple years I didn't study that great. Didn't really put in the time, and you go into your finals and you don't really know what you're doing. And then for a couple years I did prepare, and I spent the whole year, I mean, I would spend the whole semester studying and studying the right way. And all of a sudden finals were a little easier because stuff was coming back to you naturally. He's prepared. He prepared in the off season. It's what Gus has talked about. It's what all the players have talked about. All the from day to day, you're going to see ups and downs. But overall, it's clear that he has spent the off season doing all of the things that he said he was going to do, and that we talked about him doing, and we talked to him about him doing. It's clear he's done that, and I think that's where you feel more fluent. You feel more comfortable. Now, this is 3 days with very little, in comparison, very little is going on in the defense. All the stuff we always couch this with, but he does look more comfortable. So that's a good thing because he, by his own admission, is not a dazzling practice quarterback. There's going to be times in practice where, you know, other quarterbacks look better because they throw a more pretty ball. They just look more fluid. But he's also shown that, as Gus talked about, he's got that toughness in games. He's got that knack. So what you hope is that this improvement we're seeing translates into the games and goes with that stuff that they know he can do and makes a better player. I don't think there's any way in the world that he's not better than he was last year. Now, the difficult thing with Blake, and we talked about it some on the sidelines during practice the last couple of days, it's hard to judge him right now because you know that he's a guy who's better when the lights come on. You know he's, from experience, he's not going to be a 90 in practice and an 85 in the games. He's probably going to be better in the games. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to get a read right now how all these things will translate into games because it's just going to be different. So, again, looks better.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see when, as I say, the real bullets start flying around Blake Bortles. But it's the first thing I noticed. You know, I'm not a mechanical guy when it comes to the quarterback position, but I can tell that watching him throughout the offseason last year compared to where I see him right now, he looks a lot more comfortable right. with what he's doing out there on the field, which is a good sign for him. And I think there is a difference when you watch Blake Bortles versus anybody else on the team. Like, you can tell this is the starting quarterback.
And there's
no real question about it. It's the way he carries himself.
Right.
It's the way he does his reps when he's doing it. It's not to say that Chad Henne isn't a competent NFL player. I think he is. But there is a clear difference between Blake and Chad. And that was...
It's his team. The
right.
players want it to be his team.
It was partway there last year, too. You know, even at this point, it was partway there because everyone knew what was coming for Blake. We just didn't know when. Where... there was a difference when he was taking reps compared to anybody else. You could tell that he's probably the most skilled guy at the position on the team last year. This year, he's the starter, and I think he's carrying that really well into the first year where he's actually that for this team.
Blake's a quarterback, and he carries himself off the field like a quarterback. I'll give him credit. He's done a really nice job of, yes, when he was drafted, everybody knew that he was going to be the guy sooner rather than later. That's obvious when you take a guy number three overall. So he was going to be the quarterback, and he was going to be the starter on this team pretty much whether any of his teammates liked it or not. And you know, but his teammates very much like it that he is. They want him to be. They believe in this guy. That's not always easy to sort of win that locker room and win confidence, especially when you struggle the way the team, the offense, did last year. So he has done a very good job of becoming the guy that his teammates want to rally around. And Blake's the guy that I think he can struggle throughout a game. And I think there will be times where that happens because he's a young guy. But you will not have a sense on the sidelines of players going, "Oh man, I'm tired of this.
Right.
This ain't working. This isn't going to happen." Or, you know, "I ain't playing for this guy anymore." I think he can struggle throughout a game, and with 5 minutes left, players are going to go, "Yeah, this guy can still win it, and I want to win it with him." So that should be the case. It's not always the case. Blake's got that, and now we're watching the fundamentals and the footwork and the stuff that he knew he had to work on when he came into the league. I think we're seeing the beginning of that, catching up with that.
A lot more to talk about when it comes to the Jaguars offense, even without the pads on through the first 3 days of training camp. And look, maybe it's not so much about evaluating individuals as it is about a general feel that you have about where they are as far as an offensive install, and especially going up against what everyone expects to be a pretty good defense in the league. Just where does this offense stand early on in camp? We'll talk about that. We got the drive around the NFL as well as this date in football history coming up next on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I'm Tyler Devitt with your 1010XL Southeast Orthopedic Specialist local sports update, and this update is brought to you by George Moore Chevrolet. The head coach Gus Bradley joined Tony Smith and John Osher earlier in the hour here on Jaguars Today. If you missed it, you can catch the podcast on 1010XL.com. In the on-demand section, it'll be up later on this afternoon. Tonight, training camp takes the Jags down to Mandarin High School with practice getting started at 6 p.m. at Mandarin High School. Hopefully you got your tickets early as registration for tonight's practice is now closed. You can go ahead and score your free tickets for any of the upcoming practices or even the scrimmage this weekend on Saturday. Head on over to Jaguars.com/training camp events to get your free tickets. Tiger Woods rebounds from a 74 on Saturday and shoots a 68 yesterday at the Quicken Loans National. Tiger finished at 8-under for the tournament, tied for 18th overall, his second-best finish of the year. The Jacksonville Suns took game one of their five-game series with Pensacola Blue Wahoos 5-4 last night at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. Four straight night games to finish out the series. 7:05 starts tonight through Thursday night. With your 1010XL Southeast Orthopedic Specialist local sports update brought to you by George Moore Chevrolet, I'm Tyler Devitt This date in football history and the drive around the NFL are coming up next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCaw's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in football history, in 1962, the 29th All-Star Game in Chicago featured Green Bay defeating the college All-Stars 42-20. And again, we talked about this last week. Just odd that there was ever a point in time in football history where an NFL champion was taking on a group of college all-stars, but it went on for a long time in this country before it finally ended. Also, this date in 1970, the strike ended in the NFL after a four-day strike between the two sides. And in 1987, Chicago played and beat Dallas in a game 17-6. You may be going, well, why is that a big deal? It's one of the first games that the NFL had played in London. Was between those two sides way back in 1987. Some notable birthdays on this date in football history as well. Lance Allworth, the Hall of Famer with the Chargers and Cowboys, born this date in 1940. So Lance Allworth, happy birthday to him, as well as Tom Brady, who's obviously been in the news enough, so we don't need to belabor the point, but Tom Brady celebrating a birthday today, and Jacksonville's own Dante Fowler Jr. celebrating his 21st birthday today. The man was born in 1994, John. 1994.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
And he just got drafted into the National Football League. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he was born in 94, and I'm old enough to remember the college All-Star game. So there you have it.
It's hitting you on all sides today. This state in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or if you are just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, guys, the Buffalo Bills have suspended offensive line coach Aaron Cromer for 6 games for allegedly punching a teenage boy in the face last month for using his beach chairs. The boy's parents requested the charges be dropped to further prevent disruption from their lives. Cromer's first game back will conveniently be across the pond in London against the Jacksonville Jaguars in Week 7. Tony, we talked on Friday how it looked unlikely for Bobby Wagner to get a contract extension. Well, the Seahawks must have heard us, and the Seahawks signed Wagner to a 4-year contract extension for $43 million, $22 million in guarantees. And finally, Ravens safety Matt Elam tore his bicep making a tackle in practice on Saturday and is likely out for the season. The former Florida Gator was the Ravens' first-round pick in 2013. The Jags visit the Baltimore Ravens in Week 10, and that is all I have for the drive around the NFL.
Look, Seattle, and for the rest of the league, this is a good thing, right? As far as the other teams trying to play catch-up with the Seattle Seahawks, that they have, you know, and rightfully so, they've drafted so well up there in Seattle that they've been able to have all the success with players that are getting woefully underpaid because they just weren't up for contracts yet. And now all these guys are coming up. The team has had the success it's had, and they're having to find ways to pay all these guys, which means they're not going to be able to do as much, you know, as far as keeping all these pieces together. They already got Cam Chancellor, who signed a contract just a couple of years ago, that's upset about his number and his contract already with 3 years left on that deal. It's a similar situation with Michael Bennett, and they've been able to live this dream life of having a third-round quarterback who's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. It's taken them the back-to-back Super Bowls. Eventually, you're going to have to pay those guys, and it changes the way you have to do business a little bit.
Yeah, and you say it's good news for the NFL. I guess it's just sort of the cycle and how it works, a circle of life, if you will. And obviously the fascinating thing with the Russell Wilson contract signing is, you know, there's all the critics who say, is he a franchise guy or is he not? Is he an elite guy or is he not? Well, over the course of the career, this is where you find out, because now you're paying him like that. Now you can't quite sign as many guys. Now your team has to be more quarterback-centric. The so-called elite guys that we talk about, Rodgers, Brady, Manning, those guys, have been able to sort of withstand that sort of structure and keep their teams competitive year in, year out over the course of their careers. Now it's time for Russell Wilson to do that in Seattle. It'll be interesting to see. I think that will be a storyline over the next 5 years as that plays out, because that's how it works in this league now.
No, I tend to agree with you. And the other big story surrounding training camp right now in the NFL is what the heck is going on with the Philadelphia Eagles. They trade Brandon Boykin, the corner, and honestly, the move makes some sense from a Philadelphia perspective. He's not a big guy, and they seem to be trying to find those types of guys to play on the outside. He's going into a contract year, so they don't control him after this year. It doesn't seem like the team had any plan to re-sign that guy. So if you can get something for him in a trade, that makes some sense from Philadelphia's perspective. The thing is, everybody that's leaving has something pretty pointed to say about Chip Kelly on their way out the door. I don't, you hear that saying where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't know what the fire is, even in this case, except that there seem to be a bunch of guys who don't really like Chip Kelly that find a way out of Philadelphia.
Yeah, and again, I've never dealt with Chip Kelly one-on-one and not around the Eagles enough to have any, you know, this is, you would have to know something behind the scenes to know and have anything insightful to say on what's going on. I mean, so I do know that when Chip Kelly is very much a guy who seems to march to his own, you know, beat and mm-hmm. be willing to do his own thing. In the NFL, that's not usually the case. It's a very, copycat league. So different guy is going to be perceived differently sometimes. So not very insightful comments for me on that, but that, it's a fascinating story, and at some point you would love to know the real dynamics of the situation with these people leaving, because it's unusual.
It is. And look, when a player leaves a team and his comment about the head coach on his way out the door is he's uncomfortable, what is it? Uncomfortable around grown men of our culture. That's what Boykin said on his way out, you know, after he's being traded to Pittsburgh. When you have LeSean McCoy, who obviously is upset with Chip Kelly, like he's upset with Chip Kelly, and you can understand to some degree how that may be personal between him and Kelly, and as a guy who had spent his entire career up to that point in Philadelphia, maybe didn't want to wind up in Buffalo, but
right.
felt like he needed to get out of Philadelphia because of the relationship that he had with Chip Kelly. And maybe this is all still ripple effects of what that locker room has had to deal with since Riley Cooper said what he said, you know, and a lot of players yeah. that have had in locker rooms where, you know, there is a certain dynamic to an NFL locker room. If that conversation comes up, right, because of something that one of your teammates says, and he's still a part of the team, he's still around, and you have to deal with that for 2 or 3 years, maybe this is the end result of those kinds of things, where there are a group of guys in that locker room that are talking about the way the organization has handled that entire situation, totally disagreed with it. I don't think that they mishandled it, really, but totally disagree with the way they did it, and so they feel certain ways about certain people within the organization because of it, and this may be the end result of that. I don't know. But
yeah, locker room dynamics are so tough, and you know, he said, she said is always so tough.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit... So, just because these players are saying this doesn't mean that it's a reality about Chip Kelly. It certainly means that players are saying this more than you usually hear, and that makes it really weird.
Yeah.
So that's about as much insight as I have into it. I wish I had more.
And it just gets more and more interesting, you know, to watch what's
yeah.
going to happen in Philly. It's already interesting enough with Chip Kelly trying to, and maybe it's more about how he treats NFL players. Is he trying to treat them like he did the same way that he did players at Oregon? Do they feel that, right? Because you can understand how players, when he comes in, there's an expectation, well, this is a college guy. Right, and that's the conversation about Chip Kelly. He's a college guy.
Right.
He's coming in, he's trying to do things a completely different way than anybody's doing it in the NFL. He's not treating us like men, you know, the way that Andy Reid
right.
did when he was here. And that could be part of it, too, that Chip Kelly's just going to have to deal with. Look, they've won 10 games. his first 2 years. They've won 10 games in both of his first 2 years.
Yeah.
They remain one of the teams to watch in 2015, for good or bad. Them in Seattle, and because of everything that's going on, New England are certainly probably the three most interesting teams heading into camp. Yeah, and so we'll see how that whole thing plays out. Do want to talk a little bit more about what's going on with the Jaguars offensively. And I mentioned a moment ago, it's more of a feel thing for me about this early in camp. I don't want to judge individuals too much. You don't want to give them too much credit or too much blame for anything that's happening at this point. Like I said, I think T.J. Yeldon looks like a guy at times that is still trying to figure out exactly what the speed of this thing is going to be for him, and that's completely understandable. I saw Luke Jokel get thrown around by Andre Branch a little bit yesterday in one-on-ones. I don't like seeing that, but I'm going to withhold judgment on whatever work Luke Jokel's done in the offseason until I see these guys in pads and him in some preseason action against another team.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what they're doing on offense, I know for me, I don't like how much the ball hits the ground when they're doing the 7-on-7 stuff. 11-on-11, when everything's flying around as much as it does, that's a bit of a different story for me. But I don't like how much I'm seeing the ball hit the ground when they're doing the 7-on-7. Maybe it speaks to how good the secondary actually is for this team, but it feels like, I get it, it's a new offense, they're trying to install a lot of different things, but it does still feel like there's a lot of room for this team to grow on the offensive side.
Yeah, and I think that's still, you remember, this was, I don't know if it's 31 or 32, but this was one of the worst offenses in the league last year. And they're coming from that.
31 from a yards.
So it's not going to be perfect yet. What you want are strides, and what you want is are things you can rely on. And, yeah, you want to be better come September. I do recall Gus saying, and I was May or June in OTAs, that really one of the preseason goals is to get what are certainly going to be the learning curves and the hiccups and all those things out of the way before the regular season. I mean, that's but they're going to be right now, because you're not going to be perfect the first 3 or 4 days out of the box with this thing. So that's a goal. That's an issue. I'd say individually, the guy who is most intriguing to me at this point, I'm sort of past being intrigued by Allen Robinson. I think he's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And you see enough things that Allen Robinson does where he gets open, he uses his body to make the catch, that it's hard for me to think that he's not going to be pretty productive. Julius Thomas, same way. The X factor is Marquise Lee, because he is clearly a guy who, out of all the skill players they have offensively, he's the guy that you should be able to rely on the most to, once every three games, make a play where he turns something into a spectacular play, and you go, wow, we didn't really earn that, but we got it because he made a play above the X's and O's.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have to have in this league, playmakers. At the same time, he's had a few drops early. You know from last year, consistency. He's got to harness this. He's got to become more consistent. If he does, then you might be talking about something special, but it's still not there yet.
Yeah, I mean, he had the drop in, was it 7-on-7 yesterday that he had the, was that 7-on-7 or 11-on-11? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was down near the goal line by the...
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a touchdown.
Pass, yeah.
And he was going up, I was watching him on that play the entire time, because he was lined up against Nick Marshall, and I just wanted to, I'm watching Nick Marshall a little more closely when he's on the field than a lot of the other cornerbacks, and he's been okay in camp to this point.
Yeah.
Nick's been fine. And
for where he's coming from?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Marquise torched him, and Marquise is a super athletic guy. He torched him. He beat the safety on the play.
Right.
And then just dropped the ball in the end zone. And
we should clarify here that he did the same thing on Friday. Being able to torch him easily and looking the way he looks, because to me he looks much more confident and he's using his skill set much more professionally than he was last year, meaning he's got those things that allow him to get open. and he's doing it more consistently. You can tell he's running routes better. He's getting open more consistently. So all those things are good and should translate to having those opportunities in the regular season. At the same time, a receiver still has to catch the ball. And a couple of drops in the first 3 days of training camp aren't a storyline. It's not a trend.
No.
But he needs to make those plays because, boy, could he be important to what they're trying to do.
Right. It's kind of like the Dante Fowler injury, right? It's not a storyline yet. Like people are talking about, is he a bust? No, he's not a bust. He got hurt before he started his rookie year. That's not a bust. It's chapter one of a bust story.
Right.
Right.
In Marquise's situation, they're open practices, and we got to talk about something.
Yeah.
So when that happens, it's going to get talked about.
Right. And Marquise, it's the same thing. It's him dropping a couple passes the first 3 days of training camp doesn't mean he's not going to be good in 2015.
Right.
It's the start of a story of him not being good in 2015. Doesn't mean he's not going to figure out whatever's going on and catch the ball when he needs to once we get to real game action. And
There's more reason, considering where the storyline was with Marquise during the offseason, which was me getting a ton of emails about what's with this guy, I don't think we can count on this guy, blah, 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 blah. What you've seen so far is a significant turn from that because, you know, so far he's healthy, so far he looks like he's moving well, so far he looks like he can play and is a legitimate starting receiver. So all those things are much different than what we could have been writing based on what we saw in the offseason. So all those things are a good thing. Just got to clean up the drops.
No, he does. He's John Osher, and watching Marquise Lee this weekend actually made me think of something we've seen in the NFL for a long time. It made me think about it in a bit of a different way this weekend. I'll let you know what that
is. Teaser.
Continue along, also want to get into some of those new additions on defense. We've talked a lot about what's going on with the offensive side of the ball early on in camp. What about some of those new faces on defense? We mentioned Devon House with Coach Bradley, and he said that he's flashed. What about Scuda? What about Audric? At least early on, what have we seen from that side of the ball? We'll get into that as well as the practice coming up in Mandarin. And Marquise Lee reminding me of something around the NFL. The fan feedback spotlight today asking you, Jaguars fans, we want to know what non-rookie besides Blake Bortles needs to take the biggest step up in the 2015 season. At 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher, at 1010XL Tyler, and on our Facebook page as well, facebook.com/Jaguars today. As we roll along, it is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL. Fat Tony, John Osher here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. They are North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. You can go to gunsforjacks.com to check them out. Trade your gold for guns. Mike Dempsey back with us tomorrow here on the program. I may or may
maybe
not.
Maybe that's where Dempsey is. Maybe he's trading his gold.
He may be. I may or may not be in tomorrow. I got a follow-up appointment with my doctor in the morning, and I'm not sure what time I'll be done with that. So, I might be here, I might not. I really don't know at this point.
Good luck with the appointment.
Thank you very much. He's John Osher, I'm Fat Tony. We were talking about Marquise Lee, and we talked about him, continue to talk about him through the break, and just the difference-making type athlete it looks like he could be for this team at that wide receiver position. As you put it, John, he looks like the type of guy that there may be some easy yards for him as opposed to Allen Robinson, where his yards are going to come hard. And
well,
for Marquise, he's a make you miss type athlete.
And I don't at all say that as a knock on Allen Robinson.
No.
I think Allen Robinson has a chance to be really, really good and incredibly important for this offense because he's a factor that you can rely on, and he can pick up 8 yards on third down. It's not hard to imagine Allen Robinson, for example, 3 straight 3rd-and-7s, him catching an 8-yard slant and a move in the chains, and Blake dropping back and knowing exactly where he can go with the ball, and that is important for a quarterback, especially a young quarterback. But Marquise Lee, a play comes to mind last year, and I forget the game, but it was, say, 3rd-and-4, and Blake threw the ball out to Marquise Lee, and he made 2 guys miss and stepped out of bounds with a 7-yard gain.
Yeah.
And shouldn't have had a first down. It was not a first down play the way it was drawn up or executed until he caught the ball. And that's really what separates greatness in the NFL and an offense in the NFL that can do things from one that can't. Because you're going to get defended and the other team's going to do the right thing a lot. And then if you have the athletic ability to make that person miss, think Fred Taylor so often. You know,
yeah.
Would be defended.
We talk about
one cut and he's gone.
Right. We talk about throughout the season, fans complain about, you know, on third and eight, why are we throwing the ball 4 yards? Well, if you
sometimes
watch
you
a lot of other NFL offenses, even the really good NFL offenses, they throw the ball 4 or 5 yards on third and eight. They happen to have players who are talented enough that they turn those kind of plays into first downs more often than the bad teams in the league do.
Right. The coordinator there is saying, separates. If we do this 5 times, my NFL player can turn this into a first down for me 3 times.
Yeah.
Because I've got a player who is gifted enough to do this.
And Marquise feels like that type of guy. Where, you know, Allen Robinson, he's going to do that on occasion, but more often than not on third and seven, he's the guy that's going to run the right route at the right spot to 8 yards, and Blake's going to find him. Marquise Lee is the guy running that route underneath on the third and seven who catches it 3 yards past the line of scrimmage and
dances,
makes something
happen.
Spins,
and all of a sudden he's 35 yards downfield on SportsCenter.
That's what he feels like he can be for this team. And they honestly... Yeah. They need that from him because they don't have another guy who has that kind of element to his game.
Right. You need it because of a couple of things. It's hard to get that element outside the first round. So if he is that element and all of a sudden you've got a playmaker, then, boy, you've gotten one of those guys in the draft that, okay, maybe he's better than his, you know, a bigger impact than his draft status. But they just need that kind of thing that can make plays. And when you're that kind of a guy, then the defense has to worry about you. And when the defense has to worry about you, that makes them lean that way. It means you can know what's going on over there as an offense, and you know a defense has to defend you a certain way. Then you can come back and do something else. This goes back to a conversation we've had a lot. For the last 3 or 4 years, they haven't had enough guys on offense that defenses worry about. They still don't have that many guys because they haven't established it yet. But you're starting to see more guys that could be that. Julius Thomas, Robinson, I think Yeldon's going to be that. Well, add one more guy to that mix. Add a playmaker above the X's and O's guys, what is probably the best way to describe Marquise. He's the one guy on this team that you think, I'm not going to be surprised if he makes a play that doesn't look like I drew it up.
Yeah.
That he's standing in the end zone. And the coaches are going, ah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the others are like, okay, that's what I thought was going to happen on that play. Marquise might do something outside that.
Right. And what I was going to mention about Marquise Lee, watching him through practice through the weekend, you know, I realize how cool it is that I get the opportunity I do, you know, to go stand on the sideline. Like, I'm close enough that I can hear the smack talk that Sergio Brown is running during a practice, you know, and he's a talker, boy. I can hear what Bernard Pierce had to say to Sergio Brown after a certain play. Like, I'm close enough that I'm inside that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you get a real appreciation for how freakish the athletes are in the National Football League and how fast everything really is.
Right.
Like, even in an 11-on-11 drill at a practice the third day of training camp, you know, the shoulder pads were on for the first time yesterday, and you could feel the intensity level ratchet up once the pads, just those pads, came on for this football team yesterday. And, you know, I'm locked in on Marquise Lee. And like I said, this is a fast, ferocious game. And I'm locked in on Marquise Lee because he happens to be lining up virtually every time on the same side that I'm on the sideline. So he's only, you know, 20 yards from me when he's lining up. So I like to watch one guy, one matchup, generally speaking, as opposed to just follow the ball all the time out there at practice. And every time Marquise was out there, I was focused in on him. And I'm watching him, you know, these plays that take, it's just bam, 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 and the play's over. And I'm watching Marquise just with this max effort. You know, the snap comes and he is just doing everything he can to get open on that route, right? And, you know, you get thrown the ball twice in a practice.
Right.
And I'm watching these guys, you know, he may have 20 reps, but he's getting thrown the ball twice in a practice. And it made me appreciate, like, you give the guys a hard time who complain about not getting the ball, you know, and I'm watching these guys work and I'm like, man, like, if it was me, and I was that kind of athlete, I'd be the same darn way. You know, if I'm putting in that much work on a play-by-play basis, I get why they complain about not getting the ball. Because I'm watching him work his tail off, and he got the ball twice. He didn't put any less effort in any of the other 18 reps. It was just those were the two where the play happened to come to him. But it struck me watching, being that close to it, just how hard these guys work, especially on the offensive side of the ball, for nothing to be coming their way as often as it does.
Yes.
I mean, I was just like, wow. Like, it just struck me again. So when I go back to, like, Keyshawn's a bit of a jerk, right? Keyshawn Johnson,
right.
It was a little bit over the top. But, you know, guys like T.O. and Randy Moss who can dominate games the way they did, you know, when they came to the sideline and said they're not giving me the ball enough, they're right. Like, they're probably right.
Every one of them has to feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you want your guys to feel that, but watching Marquise work the way he did, man, he was wearing me out watching him put all that effort into it. I want to talk a little bit about some of the new faces on defense. And Skuda, for me, through the first couple days of camp, has really flashed quite a bit. And not only as that auto linebacker, but they've used him as a pass rusher at times, too. And he is just – he's a really effective football player early on for this team on defense.
Well, and I think that's where, you know, it's exciting to talk about wide receivers and running backs and, you know, pure pass rushers. But if there's an area where you feel very comfortable saying that you're almost absolutely positive this team's going to be better, it's on the strong side of the defense with Odrick and Skuda. And they aren't guys who necessarily were the Pro Football Talk headline when the Jaguars signed them. But they're guys who players around them have a tremendous confidence that these guys are going to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are going, you know, I hate to use the Gus cliche, but they're going to do their job, and they're going to be there. And I always tell the story about Paul Posluszny at the end of OTA saying he has such confidence in Odrick and Skuda, and that he knows that when the ball goes to the strong side this year, that the run's coming back to the middle. Now, not every time, but generally speaking, he has a tremendous confidence that run's going to come back to a spot where he knows where it's going to be. He can clean it up. That helps everything else. And yes, Skuda can rush the passer, but that reliability and sort of locking down that one position behind another position gets locked down, that's where you're not going to necessarily see statistics out of those guys, but you're going to see the result being a better run defense. That should help the pass rush, which will have a little trouble matching what it did last year with Sendarek down early, or not down, with Sendarek limited early.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be the offset there. Is the pass rush going to get 45 sacks? Tougher this year. But is the run defense going to be better enough to offset that? Should be.
Yeah, and I think it's about fit, right? I mean, last year at this time we were talking about Dakota Watson and that auto position and how he was going to fit into that kind of role. And I think you feel much better about that position this year with Dan Skuda than you did. I think he fits exactly what they wanted to be.
He's on the field, first of all.
Right.
Which, that hurt Dakota. But, you know, Skuda's a fit for this. Skuda is, sometimes you hope people are a fit. Skuda feels like a fit.
No, he does. And through at least early on in camp, he looks like a fit for this team. Look, well, again, we don't know much. We only know what we've seen so far. And I can tell you, based on what I've seen so far, you mentioned Jared Odrick. I am really curious what it's going to look like when they put the pads on, because he and Parnell has already been interesting.
Yeah.
You know, with none of that going on to this point, they've already been really interesting in their head-to-head stuff throughout the 11-on-11.
You can pretty much count on a couple of camp fights.
Right, and Parnell's that type of guy. Like, he carries himself with that type of nasty, and he has through the first couple of days of camp. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like, especially with those two specifically, once the pads go on. Because I've seen Parnell a couple times, you know, I heard about him on Friday. He ran Audric around on a play, and I was out there on Saturday when he knocked Audric to the ground on a play, and yesterday I saw Audric try a swim move. That's a big dude to be trying to swim move, and it worked on Parnell, and I could see the anger on Parnell's face when he turned around, so I'm really curious about what that's going to look like.
As you say, isn't that fantastic stuff to be hearing at this point in the preseason, this point in training camp, for a team that has struggled at some spots they were talking about.
Yeah.
And all I can tell you about Parnell is you say what you want about the fact he's only got 6 or 7 starts. I put a lot of credence in the fact that there were really 3 guys they really went after hard in free agency, really felt like they wanted. There were talk about other players at right tackle. There wasn't any doubt in this team's mind who they wanted at right tackle.
Right.
This was the guy they wanted. This was the guy they felt like they needed to go after. Same is true of Audric. Same is true of Julius Thomas. Those were their 3 jewels in free agency. Parnell so far, not having any pads on, looks like he looks the part.
He does. He does. And a lot of those guys that they brought in looked the part. Julius Thomas has looked the part. We just talked about Skuda. He's looked the part for this team. I thought
you think Mercedes looked the part. You're high on Mercedes again.
I'm high on Mercedes every year this time of year, man. Like, he's such a freak athlete, right? Like, guys that big, that athletic, just don't come around very often.
Yep.
And when they are that big and that athletic, they're usually not choosing to play football, right?
I think he's going to be more productive than a lot of people think this year.
They're playing basketball. Mm-hmm. Most guys that look like Mercedes Lewis are usually playing basketball. Well, he's an NFL tight end, and every year at this time, he does something every practice he participates in that you're like, whoa.
Yep.
Like, he'll make some kind of play, some kind of catch every day where you go, whoa.
Yep.
And he and Andre Branch have been those guys since they got here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's every time you watch them practice, you see something out of them. It's for Andre Branch, when's it really going to translate to the football field as he goes into a contract year now for them? The fan feedback spotlight. Coming up next, we'll talk about your response to the question, what non-rookie, what second-year or longer player here with the Jacksonville Jaguars besides Blake Bortles needs to take the biggest step up in 2015? We'll get to some of your answers. We'll preview the practice tonight coming up at Mantron High School as well as they'll hit the road, the Jacksonville Jaguars will, for the second year in a row out there and Mantron tonight for practice. We'll talk about that as we roll along here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL. Oh, it is training camp. It's here. We're, what, 11 days? 11 days from Jaguars preseason football. We're 5 days away from the scrimmage coming up on Saturday, so fans can come out and check that out. Fat Tony, John Osher here with you.
That's a fun night, by the way.
It is fun.
You know, my wife and son are thinking about coming down this year. And I was telling my wife, that's one that's worth coming to. That's a fun night, and it's a neat atmosphere to watch.
Yeah.
Even from up on high.
Yeah. Where
of course, I watch things, Tony.
Yeah, it is. It's the one time a year, like, we get to go watch practice, obviously, from the sideline. That's more of a game atmosphere where they'll let all the media down there on the sideline, too.
Right.
Because game day, they're not going to let me wander around on a sideline.
No, they're not that crazy about you wandering around here.
Oh, I know. I keep my head down. I keep my head down. I try not to garner too much attention when I am wandering around here. But we talked about it this weekend, too. You know, for the fans, these are really the only training camp practices on a Saturday and Sunday. They got the scrimmage next Saturday, but this is it. And it's the first weekend. Does it stink a little bit that they're not in pads yet? Yeah, from a fan perspective. But the crowds were pretty good for both days out there.
Yeah, that's sort of the nature of the CBA. More than, I mean, that's not really the Jaguars' call. They sort of have to roll out the pads when they can. By the way, fans, yesterday, it was a good practice in terms of the pads for fans.
Yeah. I they were on the third field, which stinks a little bit for everybody that came out because it's as far away as it can get from them. I get why they're rotating fields.
It's a distance.
Though. Yeah. But they'll be out at Mandarin tonight for practice. We'll get into that here in just a moment. Want to get to the fan feedback spotlight up first, though. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asked Jaguar fans, what drives you? Today in the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight, we asked, what non-first-year player, so second-year or beyond player, besides Blake Bortles, needs to take the biggest step up in 2015? Like you said, you know kind of the suspects with this kind of question. Luke Jokel from Blake Bortles, the first one we got. David Duval just said agreed in response to the Luke Jokel tweet. Eric said it's definitely Jokel, third year under some fire, and needs to make that progression into a can't-miss left tackle. From Nick, Andre Branch, if he doesn't, he won't be back next year. Could be his last chance. From Colby, Allen Robinson, need that number one wide receiver and need 1,000 yards and 7 to 10 touchdowns. From Issachar, we need a good safety to complement our great cornerback group. So he says Cyprian. From David, Luke Jokel needs to play at a Pro Bowl level or at least an honorable mention. From Isaiah, Aaron Colvin. And from Tealpocalypse, second-year player Marquise Lee, third-year player Luke Jokel, and Sip coming in a close second. As far as some of the response we got on Facebook from Bob, it has to be Luke Jokel. The Jags can't take the next step as an offense if he doesn't play better. He needs to at least play as well as the player he replaced. He has not done that yet. From Damon, he says Marquise Lee. From Chris, he just responded, there's his picture. I included a picture of Luke Jokel with this question there on Facebook. And from Don, he says Sip, Luke, and Grazi. So a lot of Jokel, as you would expect, on that kind of list. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've had the opportunity to talk to him throughout this offseason as he's getting ready for training camp. He looked bigger. He looked stronger. He looked like a lot of those things that he couldn't do during that first offseason, he's had the opportunity mm-hmm. to do this year. Now it's about that skill set translating to an NFL field, where at times he looked a little overwhelmed last year. And we'll see. I think there's a lot of pressure on a guy like Jokel, not only coming in as the number two pick, but going into his third year after that broken leg his first year, where it's got to feel a little bit to him like a make-or-break year in a lot of sense.
It is, and I think he's in a tough spot because there aren't very many, I forget what the phrase the reader used that just then, lockdown left tackles anymore.
Right.
So I guess the best way to put it is Tony Boselli ain't walking through that door again. The game is different. There aren't that guy around right now. And if there is, there's one or two. I'm not sure Luke's going to be that. But I think he can be better. I think he can be good. And I think he will be better this year. But I think if you're waiting for any left tackle right now to be a guy that you just put on the island, I didn't give up a sack all year, is just a monster out there. I'm not sure that what the expectation level in people's minds exists right now in the league. So I think he can be a lot better and people still wonder.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at.
No, I think they do, and I think it's fair. I think when you look at that entire draft class, it's fair to, you know, raise some questions about a bunch of those guys,
right?
I mean, it's not just Jokel there at number two. It's Cyprian at the top of the second round who, look, I get that there have been storylines out there about, you know, he hasn't had the free safety next mm-hmm. to him, the linebacker injuries that he's had to deal with, like all these different things where have they really been able to play Cyprian in the position they want to play him in yet? I don't know what exactly the answer to that is. I do know that for a guy that was drafted at the top of the second round and there were a lot of expectations, that there haven't been enough plays where you're like, whoa, look at Jonathan Cyprian yet in
but
his first 2 years.
I think he's been more solid than most people give him credit for, Cyprian. Hasn't been the dynamic behind the line of scrimmage guy or interception guy, but I think he's I think the defense is better with him on the field than not.
I would agree with that.
I don't think he's been spectacular.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's
he has had some missed tackles that stand out that make you go, oh.
Yeah, that play against Cincinnati last year stands, and that's kind of the issue with Sip is I can remember a handful of plays where he was out of position or something. He wasn't doing the proper thing. And I can't remember enough where I'm like, wow, do you remember that play? And
no,
like,
he hadn't had a lot of wow plays.
Right. The balance is off where he made
that's
the
what people want out of safeties, right? They want the wow.
Yeah. He's a solid player, but he's not the playmaker that I think the fans expected him to be when he got here. And I think that's fair too. Dwayne Gratz looks like he's the fourth corner now, which is okay, right? I'm okay with that if they found a guy like McCray who turns out to be a really good one. For this football team, too. But I think there's a lot of questions about that 2013 draft class, and they're fair at this point in time.
Yeah, I would say to accompany that, I think there's a lot of questions about 2013 draft class all over the league.
Yeah.
I think that was a difficult draft to come in and have be your first draft as a building organization.
Yeah, there is some of that, and there's also the you pick your guys.
Sure.
Right? I mean, if you're Dave Caldwell, you pick your guys and you live with the consequences of that decision. That's part of being a GM in the league. Before we let you go, John, a couple things. Practice coming up in Mandarin tonight. For fans that are heading out there, what do you think they can expect?
It's a practice, you know, and it's not very much different than what you would see here. So it's going to be a practice. Where they stretch, you know, and not to get too snide about it, but they're going to stretch, they're going to work, they're going to be in shoulder pads. And if you've been out to the couple of practices so far this weekend, you're going to see much the same things if you're going to see it at Mandarin High School.
Is JPM seeing the event again tonight like last year?
That's a scene. Yeah, my understanding is JP will be emceeing, and I'll be on with Brian Sexton on Jaguars.com Live for the first part of practice. We won't do the whole thing. But for the first part of practice, I believe through individual, if I'm not mistaken, we'll be on sharing some insight, which is always good.
So you can check that out on Jaguars.com if you can't make it out to practice. What else do you have coming up on the site this week?
We'll have Jaguars.com Live another day at some point this week. And primarily we've been trying to focus on each day, giving four or five thoughts on practice that day. And sort of where some position groups stand, a guy to watch, and trying to be as quick with a turnaround off of what we saw in practice that day, and you know, letting people know what's going on, because there's a lot going on and a lot of storylines with this team, and some of it's changing on a daily basis, which is kind of cool right now.
Yeah, it really is. He is John Osier. Thank you for joining me today for Jaguars Today. We'll see you again tonight.
Look forward to it, buddy.
Out there at Mandarin High School. All right, Johnny O. He's out the door. Want to say thank you again to Gus Bradley for joining us in studio earlier today, the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. So for Gus Bradley, for John Osier, for myself, Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for an absent Mike Dempsey, and for Joe Fortunato, we welcome in the boys of XL Primetime next as we continue our coverage of training camp 2015 for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.